Well, welcome back to the program. Glad you're with us. I enjoy this. I've been liking these little brief open lines that we've been doing during the middle of the week. We've been doing it for a couple months now, and folks love them. It's a little break in the action, you know, and the open lines are a little different from what we do on Fridays, because Fridays, it's a little stranger night, isn't it? But this time, just about anything goes. Lots going on to talk about, too. My God. I mean, can you imagine the things that are going on? And really, condolences to the family of that great musician, Prince. I mean, I was in shock. I didn't listen to his music a lot, but I appreciated it when I did hear it. But when I heard that we had that story when they made that emergency plane landing in Moline, Illinois, just some 45 minutes from his home in Minnesota, basically, in the air. Something was wrong, but it just sounded like he was okay after that. I mean, he even had a party at his house, but he said a strange thing at that party. He said, don't waste your prayers for a couple days. That was weird. And then several days later, he's found dead in his elevator. Very strange. Now the National Enquirer is doing its thing, saying that he apparently had full-blown AIDS. I don't know. But anyways, lots to talk about. We'll get right to your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, my friends, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Welcome back to Open Lines. And let's go right to the phones. East of the Rockies, Bubba in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Bubba, welcome.
Hey, George, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, my friend. How about you?
Great, great. Hey, I got a couple things, okay?
Okay.
To talk to you about. Okay, the first one is them old movie stars that did them horror flicks later on in life, like Barbara Stanwyck, Joan Crawford. You remember them?
Oh, they were huge superstars in their day.
Yes, they were. Like, one was Straitjacket, and at the end of that show, that lady holding the torch at the end of the movie, her head was cut off.
Oh, that's right.
And I want to say, Bozo, we had it here a long time ago, too, and there was this little black Cub Scout. He was on there, and he was laughing in the audience. And Bozo walked up to him and said, "Son, what you laughing about?" And he said, "Hobby farted," and when he said that, Bozo just cut off the air right then.
I know they didn't have they didn't have tape delay in those days. We do, but all kinds of things got through on the air in those days. They were incredible infant days of television, where people experimented and did all kinds of things. My very first job when I was 19 years old was working at a television station in Detroit, Michigan. I'm going to tell you an interesting story. My family, not my father, my dad worked for Ford Motor Company all his life, but my family of cousins and cousins, they were all dentists. They were specialists, orthodontics, general practitioners, but they were all dentists, and they all went to the University of Detroit's dental school. One heck of a school. And of course, as I was in high school, I was always interested in the unusual, the paranormal, UFOs, aliens. That's what I wanted to do. Well, and a lot of that had to do with my mother. You know, she brought me home a book called We Are Not Alone. It was by Walter Sullivan, who was the New York Times science writer at the time. I was just fascinated with all that. But when it came time to ready to go to college, and I wanted to go into broadcasting, and the University of Detroit had an incredible broadcast curriculum, and they had their own closed-circuit radio station and their own closed-circuit television station, studio cameras, everything. That's what I wanted to do. But Dad had his own idea, and you got to understand, my dad was born in the Middle East, Christian Arabic, and they watched their family intently. That's what they did. And Dad wanted me to be a dentist. And he was paying for most of the college. And I was 18 years old. And I did what my dad wanted me to do. I decided I wanted to become a dentist. That's what he wanted me to do, so that's what I did. I did that for 2 years. At 19, going into 20, but 19 years old, I couldn't do it anymore. God loved dentists, but I couldn't do it anymore. And so I switched my major into broadcasting. And I didn't tell my father that I did this. And he would always get the report cards, would always be sent to him. All right, university would send them to him. And he'd get it, and we'd go through it. And this time he calls me in and said, "Hey, something's wrong here." I said, "What, Dad?" He said, "Well, I got the wrong report card from you about you." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, somebody is doing broadcasting courses and speech courses and getting A's. Whoever this guy is, he's doing great. But there's no dental courses or anything like that. We've got the wrong report card." I said, "Dad, I switched my major." He would not talk to me for 2 months. He was that upset. I switched it into broadcasting because that's what I wanted to do. I just didn't want to go and become a dentist. So anyways, I'm in this broadcasting course, and a dear friend of mine, his name's David Whitman. David went on to become a great television anchor man at Cleveland and Detroit and all over the place. He was working at a television station in Detroit, and he wanted to go home to Cleveland for Christmas. We're like 19 and 20 years old. We're kids. I was 19. And they said, "Look, you can go," the TV station told them this, "but you got to find someone to replace you for a couple weeks." You know, we were production assistant copy boys. That's what we were. And so he found me. He said, "Hey, George, would you do this for me for 2 weeks? And they pay you $2 an hour, by the way." And I said, "Yeah, absolutely. I loved it." My very first job was at that television station. And so David came back, and, you know, it was his job. He came back. And so I'm done. I'm leaving. And the news director calls me in. Frank Benish was his name. Went on to work for the Ford Motor Company in the public relations department. And Frank says, "George, come here." I said, "What?" He said, "Where are you going?" I says, "Well, Frank David's back. I'm done. Thank you. I really appreciate it." Frank also taught courses in broadcasting at the University of Detroit. So I knew him. And he said, "You're not going anywhere. We're keeping you too." I said, "You're kidding me." He said, No. "You can work about 20 hours a week. We'll pay you $2 an hour." I made $40 a week. I was rich. And I was 19. I was ending my second year of that kind of college, had I done it for 2 years. And because a lot of the courses I took, the science and all that, transferred over. So all I needed to do was pick up the broadcasting classes. I didn't have to go to school for 6 years or anything to get my degree. I did it in the 4 years. I got some internships, and they gave me credit for that and things like that. So that was great. It was my first job in television. And after that, I just never, ever looked back. But it was ironic how things go. Anyways, that's a little bit of my story. Let's go back to the phones. Ron in Lewisburg, North Carolina. Hello, Ronnie. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
Good, good. Thank you.
It's a great night here for these kind of talks. Thunderstorms all night long.
Oh, I know it. Right there. Tornadoes, too, so be careful.
I'm originally from Aliquippa. It's about a town 30 miles west of Pittsburgh. And back in the 60s, there was a guy named Bill Cardeal. Actually played in the movie Night of the Living Dead, which was filmed near Elwood City, Pennsylvania. I actually almost got to become an extra, but anyway, so you'll see him, Bill Cardeal. It's WIIC TV at that time, Channel 11. And towards the end of that movie, Night of the Living Dead, you'll see him as the on-the-scene reporter. But anyways, every Saturday night, he hosted a show called Chiller Theater. And they called him Chilly Billy Cardilly. And it was set up like a castle. It was a comical thing where they had this, like a midget as a court jester and a real pretty girl and that. And it was all comical. And he would host all these shows from 11:30 to 3 o'clock in the morning. Bela Lugosi, Boris Karloff, Vincent Price, all those kind of movies. And we just, I mean, even to this day, we should be, you know, I really look back. But the problem was, actually, it's a friend of mine, Bill, and I called him a couple of times, and I found out that they were done live. And I said, oh, what a shame, because, you know, I'd love to be watching them today.
Oh, my God, yeah. And, you know, some of them, they recorded by putting a camera in front of a screen, a television set. And then they were able to videotape them that way in those old days, but not a lot of them. But what a great way that would have been to have that show. Anyways, we take your text messages and questions. And Tom, you've got one for me?
Sure do, from Brandon in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Why do you sound the same now as you did when I was in St. Louis? It's amazing quality.
Yeah, the equipment is very good here. Well, you know that, right?
Yeah.
So this is from Brandon. I heard you talk about the guy that you didn't want on who was going to do a Bigfoot pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, do you have any other stories of guests you have rejected?
That never got on? What do you think, Tom? What do you think he's asking?
Yeah, I think he's asking, like, have you talked to a guy where you're like, nah, I don't want him, and why
yeah,
don't you want him?
Here's the process. As we know, Tom is a senior producer of Coast to Coast. Lisa Lyon is our executive producer. And all the guests will funnel through her, and Tom will do his. And so she interviews a lot of these people first that I don't even know about if they don't get on. I mean, she rejects a lot of people because you have to learn how to, you know, talk on the radio and do stuff. And we've had some people who've been on who, you know, are difficult to understand and stuff like that. And we cut the interview short and quick. But we have had some people that just don't cut the mustard. And, Tom, you've run across a lot of them.
Well, right? Yeah, from the pre-interviews that I do. But I got to tell you, you don't reject too many that we bring to you. So I don't know if that says that we're doing okay or that you...
Well, that's because you're doing your job. Because
okay,
the ones, the ones you bring to me, you've already talked to and screened. But how many people have you talked to and screened that you do not bring to me?
A lot.
Yeah, see?
Well, I'm very picky.
I don't think you have ever intentionally brought me a clunker guest and said, George, I got this lousy guest for you tonight. Go ahead and interview this person.
No. Never, never.
All right, thanks, Tom.
Okay.
Skype is with us. We've got Joseph in Jacksonville, Florida now. Joseph, take it away.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us.
I have been a fan listening to the show for about 8 or 9 years.
Thank you.
I was originally introduced to the show through a friend of mine, Big Mike, who's a security guard out here in Jacksonville, who was up all night listening to your show. And I'd say for the past 8 or 9 years, I probably listened to you almost every night.
Wow. Is Big Mike still with us?
As far as I know, I haven't spoken to him in a few years.
All right, Mike.
Out there now.
Hey,
don't know.
Big Mike, if you're out there, hi. But go ahead, Joe.
I had two questions for you. One is, I wanted to ask you if you've ever heard of something called the knock of death.
The knock of death.
Yeah.
Now, I've heard something called the ringing of death, but not the knock of death. So what's that?
Okay. My ex-wife told me that when her grandmother passed away, she heard a knock at the front door.
Ah, see, I hear a ringing at the front door. That's what I've heard.
Okay. Well, I guess if you don't have a doorbell, it's a knock.
It's a knock. That's right.
But she said her grandmother passed away, and there was a knock at the door, and no one was there. Well, the weird thing is, when my mother passed away, around 2:30 in the morning, I was watching TV, and there was a distinct knock at the door. So I lived in an apartment complex with a screen door, so I went out, and nobody was there. So I went back in, and I thought, well, who's going to be doing this at 2:30 in the morning? So I stood there watching through the top window to see if someone opened the screen door, and I stood there for about 10 minutes, and nothing happened. Well, my mother was sick in the hospital with cancer.
Oh, sorry.
So I called the hospital and spoke to the nurse on duty, and I said, could someone please go in and check her? Oh, they were just in there about 20 minutes ago. They changed the sheets, and everything is fine, and, you know, she's doing fine. I said, okay, thank you. 3 hours later, she called me back from the hospital to tell me my mother passed.
Oh, and she probably died when you heard that knock.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
When she called me back, I can hear it in her voice like she was she didn't know how to deal with the phone call after I had called earlier.
She was embarrassed, wasn't she?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. That's something. Yeah, I think that was mom. That was mom saying, "Hey, I've moved on."
I think so. I really think so. I also have one other question for you. I was hoping to get it into your guest, but maybe you might know. About 20 or 25 years ago, I think it was on NBC, there was a show. It was something maybe like, in a sense, like Alfred Hitchcock, in the sense that there was a host on the show, and at the time it was Robert Englund, who played Freddy Krueger.
Oh, sure, yeah. He's kind of scary all by himself, isn't he?
Exactly. And I remember watching the first episode where the camera was zooming into, it was like at a wharf, and there was a restaurant, and he was talking from the restaurant. I don't remember the whole episode or anything. I remember seeing something about a neon sign that said hotel. I think I saw one more episode after that, and I never saw it again. And I was curious to find out if you knew anything about that, if you've ever seen it, or
whatever
happened to it.
What year do you think it would have been?
I honestly don't remember exactly. It was probably within, like I said, between 20 and 25 years ago. And I think it was on NBC.
Would that have been in the 90s or the 80s?
It could have been the late 80s, early 90s.
Because he has an incredible career in television and in films, obviously. But I'll tell you what you might be able to do. If you go to imdb.com, all right, imdb.com, type in his name in the search, then you look at all his credits. Here's an example. There was a TV series called Downtown he was in 1986. I don't know what that was. I can't remember it. But you may remember the name of the show when you go down the list. He was in Knight Rider for a show. He was in MacGyver. He was in Night Court. So I think you'll find V. He was in V. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. That was on Fox, I think, wasn't it?
All right. So was the TV show you're talking about before that?
Oh, gosh. I really don't remember, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, just scroll down and look at all his stuff. And you'll find it. We're going to come back in a moment. More open lines, and we're going to do it again next hour as well, right here on Coast to Coast AM. So don't touch your dial. We'll be right back. Okay, as we clip along here, welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with my phenomenal staff, the staff that has been with me now for over 13 years. That's almost unheard of in this business, and we just keep moving along. We're going to go another five, and maybe another five after that, and then they take me out on a gurney after that. Let's go to the phones. We've got George in Houston, Texas. Boy, did you survive the rains out there, George? My gosh.
Yes, there has been.
I'm glad you did. What's on your mind, George?
First, I want to tell you that I love you.
Thank you, sir.
Person, and I've been listening to you ever since you took over for Art Bell.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks for sticking with us so long, too. Means a lot.
Thank you for the good work you do. I just wanted to bring the attention to your audience. Maybe someone out there can help me. Okay, remember when oil was about $30 a barrel? Then, if you go into the store, you can get 6 quarts for $6.
That's right.
Then it goes to 100. Then you go into the store, and 6 quarts is $16. My question is, when it goes back to 30, how come it never falls? The gas price falls,
yep,
but the oil in the store does not. So my question to everyone is,
interesting.
Why not?
Gouging. God, they're making huge profits on things like that, aren't they?
Well, I just think it's wrong.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring it to everyone's attention, and maybe someone can help us understand why is that.
And, you know, if one company would drop the price for something like that, the other ones would be forced to stay competitive, and none do that. It's almost like price fixing.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's wrong because we're the consumer, and obviously that's a blatant ripoff.
Yeah. What are you paying for gasoline now in Houston?
We don't pay a lot. We only pay like $1.47.
Do you really for just regular?
Yeah, it's pretty good here.
Yeah, that's darn good. My God. What's the highest it's ever been? Did it ever get up close to $5?
No. $3.50.
Yeah, it got up to about $4.50, I think, in L.A. a couple years ago, and now it's down. But it's, you know, it's at a good number now.
Well, that's all I had, and also I want to let you know that, you know, the spirit world is real, and that's why I enjoy listening to your show, because they don't have a problem discussing those matters.
No, not at all. Do you ever run into our buddy Billy Gibbons out there from ZZ Top?
I have seen those guys around. I've been here most of my life.
Yeah.
I've seen them.
I've seen them
going into the convenience store. They're really awesome guys.
They still have those beards, too.
Yeah, they're down-to-earth guys.
Yeah.
They're really good guys.
Yep, they sure are. Billy Gibbons, a great guitar player. And Dusty is doing well now. He broke his hip, and he's healing. Let's go to Tony in Corona, California. Hi, Tony.
Hey, George, how are you doing?
Good, Tone. How about yourself?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I decided to become my own record producing company for myself.
Oh, really?
Yep. I'm going to open it under SongPro Productions, Retro Rock and Roll and Blues.
I love it. Now, you're going to have other artists working for you?
I don't know yet. I'm doing a piecemeal at a time. I bought a laptop and I bought an interface, and I play all kind of instruments, so I don't have to worry about that. And I think in about a month I'm going to have a release of my own songs that I've written, and see about getting them on the market, George.
Well, if you need some help from us to let people know who you are and what you're doing, you let us know. We'd love to help you.
Okay. Would you like to hear something before I go?
Well, what is it? Tease me.
It's a rockabilly song. It's called...
It's something we can hear on the radio, right?
Yep.
Okay. So they're clean words, nothing like that. No, I don't have to worry about that.
No.
Okay, so I'll let you play it for about 20 seconds, and then we'll fade it out, okay?
Okay, we're going now.
Here we go. Oh, you got a great little beat there, Tony. I like that. Hey, you might want to get Tom a CD for emerging artists, and we'll help you kick off that business, indeed. And Tom, speaking of things, you've got a text for me.
That sounded like a neat little tune.
Yeah. I love the creative people. I mean, the emerging artists that we've been doing, and we've been doing this now for, what, 3-4 years
At
now?
At least, yeah. 3 or 4
and
years.
You must have 10,000 CDs.
There is so much music out there and such great people and such great tunes. I just wish we could play them all.
Yeah.
So we have something from Carolyn in Nevada. I'm a new listener and I'm loving this show more and more. Can you tell us what you consider to be the most unusual call you've ever had?
Unusual calls, we do get many, but the one I remember, and you'll remember this too, Tommy, is the lady who called and said, that was Tom, by the way, folks, not me.
Huh.
The lady who called and said that all the stars, she couldn't see them anymore. And I went into play mode, told her they were all burned out, and she started getting upset and crying.
I think that's the unusual host call.
What call do you think we've had that was so unusual?
Unusual? You know, the one that really sticks in my mind is the one on the CD that we did where they couldn't find their grandmother, and they were hunting for her.
God, that was a long time ago.
You remember that? And then they found her in her house in the attic in a box, and on her chest was that bag. And what was in the bag, George? Do you remember?
I don't.
A Ouija board. And they found her dead.
Yeah.
And the guy told the story seriously. Like,
I don't think he was making that up.
No, I don't either. And that's pretty unusual.
I wanted you to say the Ouija board because I didn't want to say it. I won't even do it.
You're silly.
Or go there. Okay, thanks, Tommy.
Okay.
Anita's in Canton, Ohio. First time caller for Anita. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi.
I had a story about Chucky. Remember the movie Chucky?
The Chucky doll.
Yeah, he was a My Buddy doll.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my sister had one, looked exactly like him, except the face was happy. It wasn't evil looking.
No, Chucky was evil looking.
Yeah, same, you know, overalls and striped shirt. I was at a pajama party in, you know, Chucky, Friday the 13th, what's the other one? Nightmare on Elm Street.
Mm-hmm. And Halloween. Halloween was one, too.
Wait, we played all those horror movies at my girlfriend, different girlfriend's houses over the years when we were teenagers. So my one girlfriend knew my sister had that doll, and she dared me to scare her with it. My sister was, you know, 9.5 years younger than me, so she was pretty little. So I decided one day, I took the doll, taped a butter knife to its hand, got down, and she was sitting on the couch, so I got behind the couch and put the doll up and said what Chucky said, you know, you're my friend to the end, and scared her.
My name is Chucky, and I'm going to get you, or something like that.
Pardon me?
What did Chucky say, too? He says, you know, my name is Chucky.
Chucky, and I'll be your friend to the end, and then he said a bad word.
Yeah, he did say the bad word.
Little, I said the bad word,
little
too.
Brat kid, right?
Yeah, I scared the crap out of her. That doll
have you ever heard of Robert the Haunted Doll?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Ah,
something strange about that, too. How long you been listening to the show, Anita?
Oh, my gosh, since the early 90s.
Wow, you've been way back with us. And this is the first time you ever called in?
First time I've ever got through, yes.
Have you tried a lot?
Oh, yeah, because my grandmother seen that UFO crash. It flew over Canton and ended up in Pennsylvania. And her
the one at Kecksburg?
Yes.
That's a great case.
1963?
Yep.
Yep. And she said that my grandpa and my grandma were sitting in the car waiting for my aunt to come out of work, and they seen it fly over and land in Kecksburg. And my great aunt was walking at that time, you know, I think walking one of her dogs or something. And she said within minutes there was a semi, guys dressed in black and Air Force people.
And off it went. They took it away.
Yep, and they cleared everybody out of the area.
Yep, absolutely. A lot of people think it was some kind of a spaceship we launched that came back, but I'm not sure. It could have been extraterrestrial.
I'd love to talk to my grandma more about it, but she passed away in 2008.
That would have been great. Well, good. Anita, I'm glad you got through.
Thank you, George.
All right.
And I know my grandma up in heaven's like, yeah, finally.
Yeah, got in. Jan's in Rochester, New York now on the wild card line. Hello, Jan. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call, George.
Yes, sir.
Trying to get you for about 6 months regular, but
wow, that's
hard to get in. Like the lady ahead of me just said, I'm a 70-year-old gentleman that's had 5 comic book stores in my lifetime.
You've owned 5 comic book stores? How cool is that?
Out of sight. I had one in New York, one in California, one in Iowa, one in Oklahoma, one in Arkansas, and one in Washington.
So how much would my old Superman comics have been had I kept them back in 57? I started collecting them.
I was hoping you'd ask that because I put down statistics for you.
Okay.
In 2014, Action Comics number 1, which was the first Superman, it had a picture of him on the cover holding up a green automobile over his head. That particular book sold for $2,500,000.
$2,500,000?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What year did that one come out?
About 35.
Okay, so all mine were from 57 to about 65.
57, if you had a number one. Every time they have a superhero come out, they usually have a follow-up after they do between 100 and 300 episodes. They'll go ahead and have, for instance, with Spider-Man, you got Amazing Spider-Man, you've got Spidey, you've got Marvel 2-in-1 with Spider-Man, and so on and so on. So they changed the title somewhat and started it with a number one all over again.
All right. But my 57 Superman would have been worth what? What do you think? If it was in pretty good condition?
$900,000.
$900,000? I had one of those.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to feel bad for yourself when you hear this. I was in the military. I went to Vietnam. I had comic books, had collected them since I was 7 years old. I had close to 100,000 books in the attic and in my bedroom and closets and all over the place. So I go off to Vietnam. I come home on leave. We're having a big dinner. And my mom says, well, now that you're a man and you fought in a war and everything, get out, what are you going to do now? What kind of work are you going to get into? And I looked at my mom and dad and I says, well, I'm going to open up a comic book store. My mom quickly rushed from the table, started crying. I looked at my dad and I says, don't tell me. He says, yeah. She called up the Boy Scouts of America and asked them when they were having a paper drive.
And gave them away.
Right.
That's exactly what my mother did. I have been, every time I go back to Detroit, I go through the basement where I used to keep them, and I can't find them. And, you know, she's 86, going on 87 next month. And I said, Mom, where are they? And she just looks at me and says, Georgie, I gave them away. And I'm going, oh. But, I mean, I had a lot of them. I mean, a lot. So if you say the 1957 one was worth $900,000, what about the second one that came out that year? I had all of them.
That would have been in the $5,000 to
$6,000. Oh, my. So you're saying we threw away millions of dollars.
My mom threw out, in 1969, she threw out over $1 million worth of comic books.
Oh, my God. And is it easy to sell them nowadays?
Absolutely. I sell every weekend all summer long here in New York State.
What's the biggest price you've ever sold, Jan?
$1,500 book.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's hard to get big money at the flea markets. You're better off trying to sell them online on eBay. But there's a lot of competition on eBay, too.
These are all collectors, aren't they?
Yeah, but, you know, every book that's ever been printed is worth probably $3 or better.
So even if I had some old Edgar Casey books and things like that, are they worth something?
Oh, yeah. You remember the Archie series?
Oh, yeah, I do. I had those comics, too.
Well, let me go ahead and blow your mind about the Archie series.
Oh, my God. Archie was worth money, too?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, was Superman, was that the one worth the most?
Superman is the top book of all time. But
that's what you call comics, comic books, right? Even though they don't look like books.
Yeah, comic books.
Okay.
It started out at a dime, went to 12 cents in the early 60s, then went to 20, 25, 35, 40, 50, 60, 75.
And they came out like once a week, didn't they?
Well.
I mean, there was a new one out once a week?
Every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks, okay.
Those
are days. So Archie was worth how much?
Okay, let me see here.
All right, pull that number out. I used to have a lot of those Archies, too. My God, what a great way that would have been to start your investment. Sell them all. Get a couple mil and just keep working. I don't think I'd ever stop, even if I won the Powerball. So what do you got for Archie? Because I got to run pretty soon.
Okay, $12,000.
For one comic book.
Yep.
Oh, well, Jan, you're not selling them anymore? Or are you still doing that like freelance?
No, I sell them every weekend.
But no stores anymore?
No, it's, you know, it's hard to maintain the store, and I'm 70, like I said, I'm in a wheelchair.
Oh, you are. Okay.
I've got dialysis and everything else, so.
All right, well, thanks for checking in with us.
Sure enough.
$900,000. Mom, you threw it away. Gosh, that would have been something. Well, I tell you what, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast. We've still got another hour to go of open lines for you. That's unbelievable. I just can't believe that comic books would be worth so much money. He's right. They cost like a dime. Then we'll be back.